Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
The text this morning from Proverbs. By instructions. Young men, hear the instruction of a father and forget not the law of thy mother. And the book of Proverbs is written as instructions from a father to a son. But turn it around, the implications are there that fathers and mothers are to give instructions to their children, isn't it? Now, there's a lot of books on child rearing, and these kind of change from generation to generation regarding the particular theories or psychology or fad that's in that kind of world about the best way to do that. But the very best book you're ever going to read on how to raise a child is this old good book right here. And the lessons that it contains in them do not change. Now, some of the context may change a little bit, but the principles and the lessons in this book do not change. Parents, it would be a good idea for us to go back and read again the book of Proverbs as a handbook on things that we need to be teaching our children. Because that's the kind of book it is. It's for the young men to learn, but it's also the kinds of things that we parents can use as a guide on what to teach our children. God knew we'd have children from the beginning. In Genesis chapter 1, He knew that. He says in Genesis 1 and verse 28, to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. When Adam and Eve sinned, salvation was going to come through children. Look what it says. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. The source that's particularly talking about that child, Jesus, that would be born, that would redeem us from this. But notice that next verse. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children. Thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. In sorrow. Any mother that has had a child knows that sorrow, and it doesn't stop when the birth is over, does it? This continues as that child grows and becomes her own responsible adult. And there's just a lot to that that's hard. It's difficult to raise a child. And there are times of just anxiety and sorrow. And so there's lessons to be learned in raising children. You know, you think about the fact that parents are to help their children mature. The children mature their parents too. That's why when we were talking about this morning about qualifications for deacons and elders, among those qualifications are that they're to have had children. Because children teach you lessons. It gives you a whole different perspective on life and on people. I was talking to a lady the other day, had her first child, talking to her on the phone. And I said, you know, I remember my first child and what happened to me when I held that little child in my arms. I held my little Rose in my arm. And I thought, from then on, everybody I met, you know, they used to be somebody's little baby they loved. It just changed my perspective on how I thought about people. And so parents are to help children mature, but children teach their parents lessons. And those are valuable lessons for us as parents to learn. In fact, that's why God said when you look for elders and deacons in the church, look for those who've been taught those lessons by their children, because that's a maturing process. There's sorrow, but there's also a blessing. John chapter 16 and verse 21. A woman, this is the words of Christ, a woman when she is in travail hath sorrow because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish for the joy that a man is born into the world. There's just great joy in having children. There's hardships with it, but there's joy with it as well. When Eve bore her first child. In Genesis chapter 4 and verse 1, it was Cain. She said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. She saw this child of hers as a gift from God. In Psalm chapter 128 and verse 3, the children are the heritage of the Lord, and blessed is the man that hath his quiver full of them. And so children are a blessing and children are a joy. When the Bible's talking about how Job was blessed, among those blessings that Job had was seven sons and three daughters. Because of that, he was seen as a blessed man, a rich man, man that had children. Abram and Sarai, you remember them? That's Abraham and Sarah. For all the blessings they had, they didn't have any children of their own. And there was a sadness in that little home because of that. Until one day, God came to Abraham and said, you and Sarai will have a son. I'm going to change your names. You're going to be called Abraham and Sarah. Sarai is going to be called Sarah. And when that little child was born, they named that child Isaac. And Isaac means laughter. Well, yes, it's because she laughed when she heard that. But it's also for the joy that she had in having a child. So there's great joy. And then back in, again, there's great responsibility. What God says when He made that announcement. Genesis chapter 18 and verse 19. God said about Abraham, I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he had spoken of him. I know him. He's going to teach his children. So that's one of the reasons God wanted to bless Abraham with these children. Judges chapter 13, beginning in verse 8. We read about an angel coming to a man and his wife and telling him they were going to have a son, and this was going to be one more kind of boy. This son was Samson. And let's look at their reaction to that. In Judges chapter 13 is probably the action many of us had when we found out that we were going to have a child in our home. In Judges 13 and verse 8. Then Manoah entreated the Lord and said, O my Lord, let the man of God which did sin come again to us and teach us what we shall do with the child that shall be born. Didn't you feel that way? I mean, it's one thing to think about having children, but when the reality comes, don't you think, Lord, teach me what to do with this child? Because all of a sudden, the real responsibility comes home. Well, it says that God hearkened to the voice of Manoah. The angel of the Lord came again to the woman, and she sat in the field. But Manoah, her husband, was not with her. And the woman made haste and ran to show her husband and said unto him, Behold, the man appeared unto me that came unto me the other day. And Manoah arose and went with his wife and came to the man and said to him, Art thou the man that spake unto the woman? He said, I am. And Manoah said, Now let the words come to pass. How shall we order the child? And how shall we do unto him? Now, it's one thing to think, oh yeah, I can babysit and take care of babies and even little brothers and sisters. But when it's your own child, all of a sudden you realize, you know, there's a lot I didn't think I know about this. And there's a lot to learn that you learn real quick about being able to take care of children. We talk about all their needs. Their spiritual needs are paramount. Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 4, shows that under the old law, God expected the part of the upbringing of that child to be brought up in an atmosphere of understanding God's will. In Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4. Hear, O Israel. The Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thy heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. and shall talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and shall be as curtains between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the post of the house and on the gates. Just this child is to be in an atmosphere in their home that acknowledges God and His Word. And that's from the old law. We read a couple of examples. I won't read these, but there's one in Joshua. The children of Israel were crossing the Jordan River. And the Lord said, now when you get to the middle of that river, you get one man from each tribe and pick out a big stone. And you take the stone out of the bed of that river and you bring it over here on the bank, and I want you to pile those stones together, because the time's going to come when your children will say, what mean ye by these stones? And you'll be able to teach your children about how God delivered you out of Egypt and brought you into this promised land. The emphasis there is on teaching the children. Now, Reuben and Gad wanted to stay on the other side of the Jordan River. They didn't want to cross over. They said, we like the land over here. Joshua said, all right, that'd be fine, but now you've got to come over here and help us fight for the land on the far side of the Jordan, and then when that's over, you can go back home. So that's what they did. Those two tribes went and fought with Israel to take the land of Canaan, and when it was over, they went back across the river. And when they got over there, they built an altar. And tribes on the far side of the river saw that, said, wait a minute, what are they doing building an altar? We got to check into this. They went over there because, see, the Lord told them to bring their sacrifices to the priest, offer at their altar. Why'd you build this altar? They said, well, the reason we did this was because in the generations to come, we don't want our children and your children thinking that we're a different people. We want them to know that we're the same people and worship the same God. So we built this altar and we made it look just like the altar that we're to bring the sacrifice to where the temple is. Then it was in Shiloh. And we called the altar Ed. So this is a story about the altar named Ed. Now that's not in all the Bibles, but that's in some of the older copies of the Hebrew. It said we called the altar Ed, and it was to be a remembrance to them that for our children and the generations to come, that we're of one people. It wasn't an altar of sacrifice. It was an altar for a memorial. The emphasis there, we want to teach our children. One of the great tragedies of that generation was that they failed to do that. They went to all this trouble to teach their children. And it says in the book of Judges, chapter 7 and verse 10, that they served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua. Judges chapter 2 and verse 10, it says, but there rose another generation, and they had not been taught, and they fell away from the Lord. Either their parents didn't teach them, or those children didn't pick up on those lessons, but somewhere it didn't work. And the children were not taught the ways of the Lord by their parents, as God had intended that to be. Now that responsibility of parents providing the spiritual training for their children continues into the New Testament. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Now, fathers, that's our responsibility to teach our children. And mothers are part of this too. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 4, it's got a strange thing that older women are to teach the younger women to do. That the older women are to teach the younger women, and it mentions a lot of things, but one of those things it says, they're to teach the younger women to love their children. Now you would think, why would anyone have to be taught that? Because don't you just have that natural affection for your child? And you're just in love with them. But there's more to love with them than just having an affection for them. When you look at what the Bible means by love, it's talking about self-denial and sacrifice. And you have that child, and all of a sudden, your life gets to be very, very small and low priority compared to the life of that child. And there's a lot of self-denial and sacrifice if you're going to raise those children correctly. And older women can help younger women realize, yes, that you are doing right. You know, that is going to be hard. You do go through this. And that's all part of the process. That's where that help can come. So to teach the younger women, it says in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15 that the woman shall be saved in childbearing. It's talking about the different roles of men and women in the church. But certainly it talks about that role of women involved in teaching children and bearing, and their responsibility for children is involved in that. There's an example. 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5 of Lois and Eunice, who taught Timothy the unfeigned faith that was in grandmother Lois and mother Eunice that was in Timothy also. And the reason is, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 15, that from a child thou wast taught the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation. Here you've got a grandmother and a mother teaching that little boy from a child the things that God says in His Word. And so here's why I usually get in trouble. Whose responsibility is it to take care of your children? Well, it's your responsibility. And so people say, well, it takes a village. Well, what it takes is a family, is what it takes. And the children are the responsibility of the parents. And you start looking at the village we live in. Do you really want society to raise your children? You look at our society. Have you checked the newspaper lately? Do you hear what's going on in the news? You look at what goes on in our public schools. Is that who you want raising your children? And I think any responsible parent says, no, what we need to do is protect our children from our society and raise them counter to the flow of the culture to overcome that. Not just to be part of what's going on, but to be different from this world. And so it takes a mom and it takes a daddy. Now, I want to say this to help us realize the challenging task before us. There was a time, once upon a time, where children were raised in homes as part of families. I mean, when you had your children, you had the mother and daddy that were going to look after that child, and you had a whole bunch of aunts and uncles there and a whole bunch of cousins all around and grandparents and maybe great-grandparents are all right there together, and this is just a whole family raising that child. And that's not real common today. A lot of times it's just left up to mom and dad alone because all the kinfolk are scattered and it's hard to keep everyone together like that. But it's even harder because for several generations now, dad has almost not been home. And so dad's not around a lot of times. And so much of it just falls in right in on mom. Now it's worse than that. Because now we got a society where a lot of times mom's not home either. There's two incomes in this family. And mom's job is to get the kids at the daycare center. Or to pick them up after school. And so the family's gone, and dad's gone, and mom's gone, and who's raising the children? Now even though there's just a little time left, there's still a great impact that mom and dad have on those children, and you better believe it. In fact, even with that little time, you can overcome all the things of the world. That's because you're there year after year and all through that, and you can set your priorities and do it. But isn't that a challenge? We better believe that's a challenge and realize that and order our lives accordingly. And if anything, let it dawn on us the importance we have of making sure we do this right. Now, is daycare centers wrong and schools wrong? No, they're not wrong. They can be aids in helping parents raise their children. But a lot of people have turned these potential aids into substitutes. And that's wrong. It's still mom and dad's responsibility. And whatever sacrifice or self-denial is involved, you better make sure you're taking care of your children. Use the assistance, but don't let it become substitute for your responsibility. Now I want to zero right in on who's going to teach your children the Bible. We are so blessed in this congregation. We're involved in our children, and we do things for them. We've got Sunday school. We provide a class for them on Wednesday night. We do vacation Bible school. We have youth meetings we can attend. We're involved in our children. In fact, if you look at the physical facilities there, half this building is for our children, isn't it? When you look at the classes and such, somebody says the church isn't doing enough for our children. Well, maybe the parents aren't taking enough advantage of what the church is doing for the children. What if there was no Sunday school? What if we didn't have vacation Bible school? What if there was no class on Wednesday night or any youth meetings to go? Would your children know the Bible? Well, they should, because it's still the parents' responsibility to teach their children. There's nothing wrong with Sunday school. You know, like these daycare centers and these public schools, Sunday school and vacation Bible school and youth meetings and the Wednesday night class, those can be helps. But they're not substitutes for the parents' responsibility to teach their children the Bible. Now, how do you do that? God's given us this book that is just wonderful for teaching children. There are so many good Bible stories that from very little children can start repeating Bible facts even before they know what they're saying. You ask them, who was the first man? They can say Adam. They can start learning to say these things. You can teach them Bible facts, and then they grow older and you can teach them Bible stories. There are such good Bible story books. We need to sit down and read those Bible story books and let them know those Bible stories. And then as they grow older, and things happen in our lives, and we're sitting around the dinner table and talking about the politics or talking about the economy or talking about the crime or talking about whatever's come across that table or what happened at school, you can always just bring this into a biblical context. Well, you know what the Bible says, and start talking about what the Bible says about those things, and bring those children up in a home where the Bible is discussed and the Bible is the guide. You not only teach them that Bible, and then those children are watching you, and they can see all these things being acted out in the lives of their mamas and daddies. And then those are the things that can stick with them as they turn into adults, and they'll know their Bibles. Well, I'm glad we got Vacation Bible School and Sunday School. More important than that is parents. They realize it's their job to make sure their children are taught about the things of God. There's a story in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 11 about a girl named Hannah that desperately wanted a child. And she prayed to the Lord that if the Lord would give her a child, that she would give that child to the Lord. That's the attitude that we as parents need to have. God has given us these children. Mom and Daddy, our job is to give those children back to God. To raise them up, not just to be our children. To raise them up to be children of God. Near the close of the Bible, in the book of 3 John, verse 4. John says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Would not that be the joy of us all? That we've raised our children to walk in truth.